And now, the real game begins. It's time to go inside the locker! Welcome to Inside the Locker, the nerdiest sportscast on the internet. We were the geeks stuffed into the lockers in school, but we have studied up on sports while we were in there, and now we are a mutant hybrid that neither Professor X nor Magneto wants anything to do with. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, the leader of this motley crew, and I am joined by three snickering musketeers who are collectively worth at least 100 grand. First to my left, JC DeLeon.
What up, what up?
And then, of course, our neighbor, Adam Charles.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Elliot, the lawyer, Fontanette.
Do you mean the candy bar?
Yeah, those were all candy bars. You want? I'll back up. You know, if I was going too fast for you, I'll back up here.
It didn't click.
Three snickering musketeers.
I just thought collective.
Oh, for crying out loud. So, yeah, we're off to a rousing start. Thank you very much,
so
Elliot.
So what we're saying is 100 grand is made up of three Snickers?
Yes. Do the conversion. There's a little chart on the back of the notebook. I don't have time to teach you guys how okay. This works. Inside the Locker is brought to you by Rocksauce Studios. Rocksauce creates gorgeous apps and products that people actually want to use. They start with extensive user experience to make products the market wants, and then their amazing design team makes the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Whether you're ready to start your project, looking to schedule a speaking event, or have a couple of questions for the team, reach out to them at www.rocksaustudios.com and let's get a little saucy. I want to remind you guys that Inside the Locker, just like all of our content here at oneofus.net, is available on iTunes. Just search for One of Us in the podcast section. You can also follow this show on Twitter at ITLcast. You can follow the whole site on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet, and you can become a subscriber to the site, which I'm telling you guys, no bullshit, it would be a really great thing for you to do right now, because we're about to put in place a bunch of really cool incentives that are really going to make it worth your while to be a subscriber, and we're going to grandfather in everybody who's just been giving out of the kindness of their heart. So, pretty awesome stuff going on there.
Awesome. Awesome to the max.
We have the cop tournament on deck, the cop movie tournament on deck. But first, hold the goddamn phone. It's sports news.
Flash, the captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at Sequest. These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press.
All right, now the first thing we need to talk about, there's not a lot for us to talk about this week. There's probably a lot we should be talking about this week as a goddamn sports podcast.
Not really.
But, you know, aside from the NCAA tournament, which has been completely insane and impossible to predict, I mean, I think they were... the number of perfect brackets entered anywhere by day three was completely zero.
I think the Ewoks in the Sweet 16 now.
See, the Ewoks indeed are in the Sweet 16. But one of the things we do want to talk about, because it has far-reaching implications for a topic that comes up a number of times on the show, is this the fact that, okay, if you haven't been following the story, basically a group of former Northwestern University players have petitioned to basically, JC, how exactly do I put it? They petitioned basically to be recognized as employees for college football players, college athletes to be recognized as employees and be compensated for their work as opposed to just being student athletes. Am I right about this?
Well,
is the gist of it?
Not, they don't necessarily want to be compensated. Basically what they want is they want to have a seat at the table when decisions are made. Mm-hmm. One of the things about being an NCAA athlete is
you're an indentured servant.
Yeah, you're essentially free labor is what you are. You're
exactly.
free labor for an industry that generates billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah,
and there are a lot of rules on these athletes. One example I thought of today, like Natalie Portman was a student of Harvard while she was an actor. There's no rule that if you're an actor that says while you're going to college, it says, well, you can't act in movies while you're in college. Cause,
right.
You know, so basically athletes they don't necessarily want to be paid, because with that comes the issue of, well, then are they going to pay taxes? They basically just want to be able to do things that college students can do. They want to be able to go out and get jobs if they want. They want to be able to sell their autograph if they can't, if people want to buy their autograph.
They
want to
not be an indentured servant.
Yeah.
They do want to be compensated, but it's just not necessarily by the university. They just, because the thing is right now is not only are they not allowed to be paid by the university, despite the fact that these colleges, this corrupt NCAA is making all this money off of their backs and sometimes off of their images for these video games.
Oh, yeah.
But not only that, but they impose like this strict, completely like almost religiously dogmatic punishments against them if they so much as sell their autograph to pay their fucking, like, I don't know, to get food for that week.
And I've heard multiple stories over the years of, like, a player will have a relative die and, like, the the coach can't buy a plane ticket for the kid to go back and see his funeral. Like, that's against the rules.
It's absurd. Like, it's absolutely absurd.
A booster can't even buy, like, lunch for a player.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're at, like, fucking Raising Cane's at LSU, a booster can't be like, hey, let me get your Caniac combo.
Yeah.
I mean, that's gotta be depressing too for a college athlete to hear that your head coach earns like $4 million to $7 million a year.
Yeah.
And you're doing all this work for them and they attempt to, like, they can, the card that they can play is, well, I'm going to get in trouble if I buy you this.
And the hypocritical self-righteousness of the NCAA as they investigate all these quote unquote violations that are really just, like, they're not really violations so much as they are examples of how completely ass backwards their system is. But what's great about this Northwestern situation is an agency actually just said that they do in fact have the right to unionize. Mm-hmm. So, like, this has far-reaching implications. Yeah. If this goes through, the entire NCAA system is going to completely collapse. And I've actually seen the higher-ups – I don't know if it's the president of the NCAA, but it's one of the higher-ups – try to make an argument against students unionizing, and it was the most pathetic, foundless, throw-the-gun-at-them argument I have ever seen. It was just like, oh, well, then, you know, if they do that, then it was you hear what he says and you're like, you really are terrified that you're going to lose because you want all this free money.
Well, the NCAA is kind of like, it's kind of like one of those people that wins the lottery. They win the lottery, all this money coming in, and then a few years later, granted it's been, you know, decades and decades later, but then all of a sudden money's gone.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there going, what the fuck happened?
Like, yeah.
Like, a hooker's that expensive? I mean, what about the pink sheets like on Wolf of Wall Street? Come on.
I want to see this go further. I do think there was a former athlete. He was a guy who played for the Patriots for one season. TJ
Hooker.
No, not TJ Hooker. I'm forgetting his name. I'm blanking on his name.
TJ Yeldon?
No. But he made this great argument on Twitter, which was basically kind of the flip side of the coin, which is, he's all for the students having more rights, but he does hope that they're considering the fact that if they become employees to a certain degree, that they can be fired. That once you unionize, once you become an employee, once you are paid for your work, that also means that you can be terminated at any time.
But here's the thing. And the argument I would push back to him is that already happens.
That's true.
Like LSU, yeah. I love LSU, but I'll go to my own school. SEC schools are notorious for this. They do a thing called oversigning. Mm-hmm. Where they keep on bringing in more plays than they can have scholarships for. And if you're not good enough, they cut you and you're fucking out of college and never made a goddamn cent.
I have seen people super angry when they overbook a screening for, like, you know, Need for Speed. So I can't even imagine in that situation being told, oh, never mind, you don't get this great opportunity we promised
they
you.
They already do that. You are in the difference with being an employee is at least they have some power. Right now they have none.
Yeah.
Because even then, say they get kicked out of a school, they have to sit out a year. Before they can go get another,
that's even worse.
Before they can go to apply their trade,
this entire
situation is completely for the benefit of NCAA and the schools. They want it. They want it three. They want it three ways that aren't consistent. They want to be able to make all the money on these bowl games. They want to be able to call themselves. They want to be able to. This is not to be graphic. They want to suck their own dick and say, "Look how great we are because we're giving these people free education." And then they want complete control and not to be questioned.
Yeah.
And they don't fit together. They don't have internal consistency. So it's a system that's going to be brought down eventually.
Yeah. It's such
and
a bullshit argument with the whole thing of like, oh, well, they're getting free education. Well, it's like, well, that's not necessarily paying them. You know, you're giving away something that you would just charge other people.
Yeah,
that's you making maybe a little bit less money.
Yeah. But
this person is actually bringing in millions of dollars for you.
And
what argument do you have?
And you're giving free education to a person who has to work at the very least 40 hours a week.
Right.
Yeah. And the NCAA they come up with this form similar to Hollywood accounting in that, you know, the NCAA is basically saying, well, we'd love to pay the athletes. It's just there's no money because look at this $63 million facility that we built for Oregon. And it's like
– horseshit.
Yeah.
Horseshit. The reason you built that is because you have more than $63 million.
Yeah. Right. Football players don't need a 42-inch plasma in their locker.
No, they do not. Well, suffice to say that we will be keeping a close eye on this situation because I have been a staunch opponent of the NCAA for a long time. I think they are one of the most – corrupt bodies in sports, and I'm frothing at the mouth at the idea of them being taken down from within by a bunch of former players who are fed up with it. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to be watching that.
And one thing I want to mention before we move on, if you want to see a great discussion of this and a funny, very funny discussion, watch the South Park episode on this where Cartman basically walks around like a slave master.
Yep.
He's like, "Yo, student athletes.
Yeah.
Oh, you, sir, you are so funny."
Yeah, no. If there's anything that South Park is, it's one of the most biting social satires on TV.
It has subtext.
It does. So the other thing we're going to talk about is that the NFL has allowed for some rule changes for the upcoming season. Now, keep in mind that some of these are definite new rules, and some of them are just things they're playing around with, kind of like America did with the metric system, that I'm not actually seeing
being implemented. You make it sound like it was bad foreplay.
Well, kind of. Okay, so here's the new rules. The new rules that are there for good are that they've extended the uprights by 5 feet so that they now reach nosebleed seats. So yeah. that's great. The other absolutely definite rule is no more dunking, or as we call it, the Jimmy Graham rule.
Yeah.
Because your dumbass does not need to be dunking the football on the uprights and making the guy bring out the biggest level I have ever seen in my entire life to set it back. He looked like Gandalf's staff. Puts it up on the uprights, and it's like, oh, okay, now it's level again. It's like, you idiot. Like, why are you making the interns go to Home Depot? Just keep your big hands off the damn goalpost.
Right, was one of those instances where I'm normally against the NFL doing things where people just call them the no-fun league, but, like, this is one that makes sense. It delayed the game. If that goal post comes down and, like, hits a cameraman and he sues the NFL, like, that he's going to win.
Yeah. It's not like if you spike the ball and the ball explodes or something. There's plenty of other balls around.
Yeah.
It's not like they keep, like, spare goalposts.
Well, I think there needs to be an opposite reaction. I agree with the goal. I was against it until you said, well, what if it falls down? Anytime you talk about personal danger to somebody else because of you are celebrating, I'm on your side. But they need to start bringing in some of these other rules. They need to make celebrations the fun part about watching the NFL sometimes. Like, there's a movie called Any Given Sunday that I fucking love. And it has one of the funniest celebrations where, like, they throw the ball and then a bomb pops off and they fall down. That shit would end the game in the NFL these days. Just bring back the ability for these players to express themselves a little bit more.
Yeah.
And the other rule, which is just one they're playing around with, they're only going to do it in the first 2 weeks of the preseason, but it's a debate that's been raging for about a month now, is that they're moving the extra point kick from the 2 yard line to, I believe it's the 20 yard line?
Yeah.
The 20 or the 25 yard line.
I like
line
that.
Yeah. To making, make it an actual challenge.
Yeah, it's like 37 yards, which is not quite a chip.
It's not a gimme. It's definitely not a gimme. It might be a chip shot, but it's not a gimme. And
it'll make games more interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. The only thing about that is, like, I feel like if you're going to make it that much of a challenge, should it still only be worth 1 point? And then, of course,
that's a good question.
Now, the counter, like the opposition to this is people just saying, well, then just get rid of the kick altogether. But the problem is that it's still called football.
Yeah.
And slowly, as we're like, we're pulling away, like, okay, well, every kickoff is a touchback now by these new rules. You can't do these kickoffs. They're very concerned about the danger of kickoffs. So eventually they're just going to get rid of that. People are going to start with the ball at 20-yard line like it's a pickup game in the backyard.
It's a real
league. And then there's literally no foot element to football.
Yeah.
Maybe it just becomes throw ball.
Maybe it's just the foot element that Ndamukong Suh has whenever he steps on a player.
Steps on your face.
Steps on your face.
But maybe the solution is to give them a choice. Say, hey, if you want one, you get the chip shot. If you want two, you get back to not the 25, but the 35 or the 40.
Yeah, that's one thing that I thought that they were going to go with this was make it more of a strategic decision of how far back do you want to go, because the further back you go, the more points you may get. But, you know,
it's Bozo's grand prize game.
Yeah, I used to love that.
At least I thought one proposal that happened was a touchdown is worth 7 points. Unless you choose to go for the extra to get 8, but if you fail, it drops down to 6.
That is a proposal I heard, and it's one that makes the most sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, make it a strategy. Okay. Make it. That's the problem. That's what they're trying to, quote-unquote, fix right now, is they think that the extra point is too much of a gimme, and it doesn't really do anything for the game. It's just, make it a strategy.
Yeah, it's completely insignificant. Like, 99% of the time, it goes in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why even do it at all?
So make it a choice. It's like, yes, you can have the 7 points automatically, or you can go for 8, but if you don't get it from a distance, then you get knocked down to 6 points. That becomes a game of strategy. That becomes, you know, it's like any good board game. Like Jacob Hall will tell you, our chairman of the board, that any good tabletop game is all about strategy and choice. It's all about the player having to make decisions that are essentially gambles that could really pay off big and help them win the game. But they have to be careful because, you know, if it goes in the opposite direction, it could cost them everything. And I feel like if that is what they were proposing, maybe I could get behind it. But just backing them up for the sake of backing it up and still going to be a 1 yard or a 1 point maneuver, who cares?
Yeah.
The other new rule is, and it's one that it's like, seriously, it took you guys this long, is the Navarro Bowman rule. Basically allows for official to make the recovery of a loose ball on the field of play a reviewable call.
I don't understand why it's not reviewable now.
Yeah, and you may remember last year the reason why it's called the Navarro-Bowman rule is because this dude had his knee bent backwards, recovered the ball only for the referees to go, no, you didn't.
Yeah, and not only no, you didn't, but it's not reviewable? Bullshit, yeah. it's not reviewable,
and sorry about your leg.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
the one rule I would like for them to reverse is the if it depends on what happens at the end of the game, but there's a runoff mm-hmm. of the clock.
Yeah.
That's so anticlimactic.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, you just decided by a rule. That's what I want to see.
I think there should be a rule that if a quarterback decides to run, there should be no – it should be like – okay, there is a rule in the NFL. I don't know if you guys don't follow football real closely, you may not know this. There's a rule in the NFL that if a pass is tipped, you can basically do whatever you want to the receiver to keep. I'm not joking. You can shove him down. You can punch him. There are – it becomes Thunderdome as soon as that ball is tipped. And yet, there isn't a rule that if a quarterback whose main job it is to pass the fucking ball.
If he gets his ass outside of the pocket.
If he starts running with the ball, they should be able to clean his clock.
Fair game.
And I don't want any more roughing the passer bullshit if the guy takes off with the ball. End of story.
You make that choice.
Exactly. Stay in the pocket. Learn to throw the ball, Michael Vick. That's what you're supposed to do. And that's why you're not in Philly anymore.
One little bit of a story that I saw today. Apparently, Johnny Manziel is wowing people at Pro Day.
Yeah, the Pro Days are really great, but I mean, it's all just smoke and mirrors.
Yeah,
man.
It's not that hard to do because you're on a field. You basically stand there, all NFL scouts say, "Hey, see if you can throw that ball in that bucket." And
it's like the level in Street Fighter where you're not fighting Chun-Li anymore. You're punching the car. So it's like, that's great that you got a great time beating up the Oldsmobile, Johnny.
Now, that's
Manziel,
a euphemism for jacking off if I've ever heard one. Beating up the Oldsmobile.
Beating up the Oldsmobile.
Making it all boxy.
Actually, little known fact, some other rule changes they're considering in the NFL. Making the quarterback wear a giant Mardi Gras head. pillow fights in the fourth quarter. And not sure of the exact logistics of this, but the exploding football. We'll have to keep our eye on that and see exactly how they implement it. But that is the sports news as it stands right now. Oh, and the Pacers beat the Heat. So moving on to the tournament. It is time for the Inside the Locker. Okay, hold on.
Gather yourself.
I got this. The Inside the Locker, totally accurate, desperately necessary. And every single time. Okay, I'm just going to do it. The Inside the Locker, totally accurate, desperately necessary movie elimination tournament. And this week, in honor of Sabotage, we are doing the very best cop movies. We're going to whittle it down to a grand champion and then read them their rights. You have the right to remain awesome. You have the right to remain on top of the pyramid. And we tried to stick with movies for this particular tournament that were just centered on cops. We tried to stay away from, like, federal agents. We tried to stay away from too many detectives because we thought Sabotage was going to be a movie just about cops because it's David Ayer. Turns out
they are in fact
DEA agents. So right out of the gate, we have failed.
We never said we were like good at this.
No. At no point did we profess to be good at what we do. We just do it.
But even so, if we were gonna extend this out to almost all kinds of cops, I mean that would be a massive list of movies.
Yeah, I mean, solo cop movies is a good start because from here, buddy cops, buddy cop comedies,
Yeah.
I mean, practically each type of subgenre can make up its own bracket.
I mean, yeah. We could have an entire buddy cop genre with just Edward Norton movies.
Could we do that? I guess
or
we could.
Ray Liotta, which I'm going to talk about later.
Ray Liotta, who I will always remind you looks kind of like a summer squash, is
fun fact related to sports.
we're still technically a sports show.
Yeah. Mark Grace was a former first baseman for the Chicago Cubs. His wife left him for Ray Liotta.
Damn. Wow. Yeah. I guess he's not such a good fella after all. Anywho.
He can only get to second base.
Yeah, exactly. As you guys are well aware by this point, our movie tournaments are, they only function if we have the right judge, if we have the right person sort of hearing all of the facts of the case and deciding which film advances from bracket to bracket. And this week, I don't think we could have possibly gotten a better judge. Because here to decide who moves on in each individual bout in our cop movie tournament is an actual cop. My friend Seth. Seth, thank you for joining us.
1041, officer on duty.
Is that what that means?
Yep, that's what it means.
I thought it was public urination. I need to make some calls. It's apparently not public urination. So
what is the code for when you guys have to go use a restroom, like on movie sets? You say, I now forgot the term, but there's a term for when if somebody's looking for somebody and like, oh, where is this person? And he's like, oh, he's doing so and so. That means he's pooping. What do you guys
say
for that?
What's the code for taking a shit?
Cosby's movie? Mm-hmm.
We just say 10-6, which just means okay. I'm busy.
Okay.
That's very classy of you. That's very classy. So, Seth, here's how it works. Basically, we've got the Sweet 16 of cop movies all designated here, including one play-in option, which I will announce in just a moment, who the fans voted on, the 16th seed. And what we're going to do is we're going to stack these movies up against each other, March Madness style, and each person will have a designated movie. They will make a case for 1 minute. At the end of that 1 minute, the other person will make their argument. They are allowed one rebuttal per round. Each person is allowed one 15 to 30 second rebuttal each round, and it will be your job once all of the facts have been heard to decide who made the stronger case, and therefore which movie is advancing, and eventually we will whittle it down to one grand champion. Sound good?
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. All right. Well, I have to, like, wait, I have to make sure that my phone is working in the official timer capacity, because you are not actually here in the room, so you can't...
I'm there in spirit.
You're here in spirit, but it makes it hard for you to know if I'm actually timing this correctly, so... All right. So before we go any further, I want to let you know that the play-in choice in the lower right hand division.
Yeah,
that sounds like porn movies.
The lower right hand division was actually Shaft. I gotta commend you guys. I really thought that the minute we put Kindergarten Cop in the play-in
would have been my
poll that it was gonna win in a walk.
Yeah,
but actually Shaft took it. Like,
hey, watch your mouth.
Yeah, I can dig it. But Kindergarten Cop actually finished dead last. I was pretty, like, as much as I love that movie, I am really proud of you guys for not just going with Kindergarten Cop. You did well. Yeah. You did well, guys.
Could it be the generation starting to turn over? Like,
maybe.
Maybe, or they're just a little too young to really...
Or maybe...
I mean, to be fair, we put Kindergarten Cop against movies that probably would have, normally under most circumstances, probably made the bracket anyway.
On like,
these
own.
Are like,
yeah.
Like, these are very strong cop movies.
Police However, Academy, Assault on Precinct 13, and Shaft. Yeah,
yeah, like, so...
That's true.
But, I mean, the fact that we couldn't actually include them because of the movies we'd already come up with...
Yeah.
Says a lot about, I guess, just how many really good cop movies there are.
Kindergarten Cop was our Weber State, I guess, is what we're trying to say. it didn't stand much of a chance against the Three Dukes.
Round one, fight!
Anywho, we're going to start off this tournament in the upper left-hand division. I don't, like, they're not actually divided by anything, so I just to keep the bracket straight in my head, we're going with the top left-hand division, and the first two movies to battle will be L.A. Confidential versus Copland. This is Elliot versus J.C. Gentlemen, who wants to go first?
J.C.
All right.
J.C. will be going first, and you have 1 minute to tell us why Copland is superior, starting now.
Cool. So Copland has a director that knows his action pretty well. He also knows his drama really well. Directed Walk the Line, 310 to Yuma, The Wolverine. Out of all the films in this bracket, this has the most badass ensemble cast. Stallone, Leota, Keitel, De Niro, Robert Patrick. Those guys have all been, you know, legends in cop movies of their own. Ray Liotta himself has been a cop on screen at least 15 different times. He might be able to actually be a cop at this point in his life. this is one of the better, more, I think, underrated roles of Stallone's career. He actually gained a lot of weight for this role to play the role of a sheriff of this New Jersey town that houses a lot of cops from New York City. And Stallone is kind of the lone eye that keeps watch over the city. All right, that's it. Had 3 seconds left to spare. I wasn't going to finish my argument.
All right, Elliot, are you prepared for your argument for L.A. Confidential?
Yep.
All right, and go.
First thing I want to do before I talk too much about L.A. Confidential, I want to go straight at J.C.'s argument about an all-star cast. You want to talk about all-star cast? Let's talk about Kevin Spacey. Let's talk about Russell Crowe. Let's talk about Guy Pearce, James Cromwell, Kim Basinger, Danny DeVito. Like, the list goes on. It's a veritable all-star. It's like the Globetrotters are playing the Generals here. So, and also, it's a movie that, in a rare sense, is actually better than the book. That's so rare. The last time, like, until Catching Fire, I hadn't seen a movie that was better than the book. But let's just go into the plot a little bit. It's a mystery. It doesn't come at you straight on. It makes you do a little work for it, and it's better for it. You got Kim Basinger. That was her big comeback. She won a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for it. It was nominated for 9 Academy Awards. And it covers that old Hollywood 50s LA when there was so much hope so well. And it even goes into that part of the police movie that is seminal, the corruption, and how that really plays into being a cop.
Well, I take offense to that part.
Well, the lawyer doesn't.
Whoa. It's sense the room, Elliot. Get a sense for the room.
I didn't mean that cops are corrupt. I meant sometimes they're bullies. I don't know.
All right. Well, JC, would you like a rebuttal, or are you good?
I'm good.
All right.
No,
so,
rebuttal? I thought, oh.
Hey, you know what? I think when you upset the judge, I think JC was like, oh, I don't need a rebuttal at all. So, Seth, tell me what your thought process is here.
Well, between these two, and you guys both give good arguments, but for me, I'm sorry, this really is no contest. I do have to go with L.A. Confidential because I love that time period, and I love that it's a mystery, and it's just a very good movie. I love that movie.
Thank you, Seth, for understanding I misspoke there.
Yeah, you got away with one there. I'm not going to lie.
I feel like bring up a good point, you know? I mean, most cops are good people, but there are bad apples, and you can't shy away from what's reality, and that just adds to the drama of the whole thing.
Wow, very very level-headed cop here.
This is how you know he's a good cop, because he's actually able to say that.
Right.
Some cops are like, no, we're all angels. It's like, I'm not saying all y'all bad. I'm saying, like, if you got 95% good people, you're going to have 5% who are assholes.
It's still shit, though.
But he is saying, fuck most lawyers, though.
No, fuck most lawyers. I'm a token bleeding heart liberal of my police agency, so there's that.
Oh, you're the bleeding heart liberal of your police agency?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Well, there you have it. We have the liberal cop judging our cop movie tournament. This will be interesting. I'm excited about this. So next up in this particular division is Stray Dog versus RoboCop. That is Adam versus myself. And something you should know about Adam is he tends to win every fucking tournament.
Tends to.
Like, every single time. He somehow manages. No, it's not somehow. He does a good job. But in this case, I'm going to destroy him.
Yeah, you probably are. But anyway, go on.
Oh, is it me first?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let me put a minute on the clock for myself and go, me. Okay, so cop movies really are a function of the environment in which we place our hero or antagonist, depending on what type of cop we're talking about. And in the case of RoboCop, you could not ask for a more direct correlation between environment and police officer and type of police officer and type of police work. Detroit in the 80s, basically a dumpster fire. That place was basically an apocalyptic wasteland, and out of that you have RoboCop. You have Alex Murphy, who is brought back to life using technology, you know, a very Dr. Frankenstein-type parable, whether or not that's wise, whether or not that's moral, but he is, for all intents and purposes, the cop who is necessary to take care of things in that time, and I really think it's a parallel to modern society, and we have to have the right people who are willing to do the things that need to be done in order to return the most heinous parts of the scum and villainy, the Mos Eisleys of the world, back to law and order. So for my money, RoboCop is one of the best movies out there. Boom.
Nicely done.
Are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
And go.
Okay, so amongst all the other films that we have in this bracket, there's few of them that you can really point to being actually handled by a true master of the cinematic medium, and that's Akira Kurosawa. Amongst all of Kurosawa's films, this is probably the first of his that you can actually mark as he was going to go on to make just a string of masterpieces following this movie. Now, as far as the credence of making it into a great cop film, it's one of the few that actually also really pinpoints the characteristics of certain cops of putting forth honor and respect, like bringing in the old cop, of having the old cop and bringing in the new, and how much of a cop in a newer cop, a rookie cop, can put so much emphasis on trying to impress and make the right decisions, because he makes a bad decision at the beginning that he's trying to correct throughout the entire film, which is what makes up the entire plot. And it's something that's very few far between in cop films of the rookie trying to impress the superior.
I will not rebut that. I'm going to leave that as it lies. And Seth, it is now up to you to make the final judgment.
I'm not going to lie, this one's tough, but there is one factor in one of these movies that makes me pick it, and that's because of what's going on today. I have to go with RoboCop on this one, and the reason is because not only is it a great action movie, but it tackles one of the big issues we're having in law enforcement today. It's really big in the UK right now. It's starting to come into the US.
cyborgs.
That's the privatization of law enforcement. A lot of people think that we should replace public servants with essentially private security guards. I say look no further than RoboCop and see what happens when you privatize public safety.
I think you're absolutely
right. Generate profits, so you're going to start to create crime.
Yeah, I think you're right. I do think it's funny that Adam thought you were referring to cyborgs.
Well, fuck cyborgs.
Cyborgs are really becoming a more and more a pivotal part of law enforcement in America, yeah. And a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, be machine or be human. Don't be both.
All right, well, RoboCop advances. And next, now we've moved over. Adam angrily scratches out his notes. We're moving on to the bottom left-hand division. It's a hotly contested division, that bottom left-hand.
And it's always busy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a stranger division.
It's the reach-around.
So the first up in this division is French Connection versus Hard Boiled, which, once again, is me versus Adam. So, Adam, I'm going to let you go first this time, okay. And I will wait to see what you do. Are you ready?
All right. Okay.
All right, and go.
Okay, so Seth made mention earlier in the last argument we just had about great action films. Well, it really doesn't get much better than Hard Boiled. I mean, it's a movie that actually revolutionized or helped revolutionize an entire action subgenre of like that slow motion, that the stuff that John Woo brought from overseas into American film. Like it actually sparked an entire decade's worth of action films following right after that. I mean, it's also what helped solidify Chow Yun-fat as an international superstar. It brought him from overseas. He'd been doing a lot of work with John Woo prior to Hard Boiled, and it was the one that actually put the cap on their entire working relationship by making probably the best movie that they ever had together. Up until that point, they'd already made about 3 to 4 other masterpieces. I mean, there's not much more you can say about it. It's a movie that just guns are a-blazing, and action is just nonstop.
But it is not the movie Nonstop.
What about Nonstop?
What about Nonstop, though? All right. Okay, and I'm giving myself a minute. So I completely agree with everything Adam said, but I feel like if we're talking about movies that really hit upon the points and emphasize the aspects of a cop's life and what it means to really be a police officer, The French Connection, it tackles something that's very uncomfortable and that a lot of cop movies don't, and that is the frustration of a cop who is kind of powerless to do anything about the influx of crime. Popeye Doyle, Gene Hackman, is a character who is trying against, you know, political red tape, against bureaucracy, against corruption, to bring down the drug trade in his city. And yet, at every step of the way, he is the one being handcuffed by this red tape and not able, but he keeps fighting, and it infuriates him, and it's sort of this barbaric type of like frustration that he feels. It's very it's the not only quintessence of being a cop, but the quintessence of being a man trying to do the right thing and operating by your own principles, even when the circumstances do not allow you to do that.
I think I'm going to have to rebut.
All right. We have a rebuttal from Adam. Adam, go.
All right. I'm not actually going to rebut any of the points. I just want to point out the fact that because everything he says about French Connection is absolutely true. It's a great film. But the two polarizing parts of these two movies in comparison to one another, French Connection makes cops seem it's a very dirty representation of cops.
Yeah.
Hard Boiled, on the other hand, makes it look very sexy. I mean, cops look sexy. They make everything look awesome. This is the kind of movie that makes you want to actually go out and be a cop.
All right. I will rebut that as well. And my rebuttal is thus. John Woo obviously is a master of action and set the standard for a lot of action shootouts. However, French Connection definitely set the standards for car chases in cop movies. There is a danger and a recklessness about the way that the car chases are filmed in William Friedkin's French Connection, and it's absolutely mind-blowing to watch. So I have to give it up for that. And
fuck you for putting that out, man.
All right, so based on the arguments, Seth, which movie is advancing here?
Based on the arguments, I have to go with The French Connection, because even though I love Hard Boiled, it's a movie that you could replace them with any other sort of action genre, any sort of, you know, whatever. And it doesn't really feel as much as a cop movie as other ones do. Still a great film, love the action, but not quite a cop film.
Adam angrily scratches.
If it makes you feel better, Adam, though, I have a feeling that Adam, or Brian was saving that for the second round, and he pulled it out because he thought maybe you were.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And Seth, yeah. I just want to remind you: try and act as if you have never seen these movies before, and really focus on just judging them on the arguments.
Because, oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. There, right on. There are some here I have seen, some I haven't.
So oh, awesome.
I'm going based solely on your arguments.
Awesome. All right. Well,
and Salisbury bring his A game today.
It's funny because I'm not going to say what I need to say because it'll make Adam really mad.
wow.
Which is that I did not prepare at all. I literally, nice. Like, I know well, I mean, really did.
I mean, well, that means, I mean, you're talking about RoboCop and French Connection. I yeah. mean, it's not necessarily, you know, Police Academy.
Those aren't uphill battles. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Okay, so in finishing out the bottom left hand is Elliot. No, I always sorry. Do. Sorry, is Elliot versus JC. Serpico versus Training Day. Gentlemen, who would like to go first?
Fuck me. Really?
I'll go first. It sounds as JC.
All four of these movies are in one bracket?
Well, they're on one side. Yeah, they're on one side of the bracket.
Just give me one.
Man, we made it because there's a ton of cop movies, so we made a good bracket. And there's a lot of stuff we left off, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sorry, who's going first?
I'll go first.
You're going first? You need a moment?
I should be fine. Okay, just around.
And go.
Serpico. When you talk about Serpico, you're talking about the seminal cop movie of the 70s. This is a movie that really saw Al Pacino explode onto the scene and really get noticed for being a great actor. But more than that, it's, I think, the only one in this entire tournament based on a true story that actually inspired real action and had some reforms come out of it. And I'll tell you, just for me, when I was at LSU, it's the only movie that I've ever, it's the only movie I've ever seen that I actually had to study in class. I took a criminology class when I was at LSU, and we had to break down the movie, and then we had to read an associated book with it. And it really does, and I read an account, and according to Serpico himself, the movie gets a lot about what he went through right. It's very rare that you see the subject of the movie actually praise it, so beyond how great it is, beyond how great Pacino was in it, and how many awards it's gotten, it's a movie that actually inspired real social change.
Okay. And JC, are you ready?
Yeah.
Go for it.
So part of what inspired this tournament in the first place is the new movie from David Ayers. And David Ayers wrote Training Day, and so he's really kind of the iconic name when it comes to cop movies. We can talk about Denzel Washington and his legendary career. Well, his career, which somebody thought was already skyrocketing before he did Training Day. Then he did this movie. This movie got him his first Oscar. If you ask Denzel Washington today what his favorite role is, he will say that it's probably Training Day. His character of Alonzo is one of the more badass solo cops in this tournament. He discusses a version of street justice that I think is prevalent today, especially in an area like L.A. The filming of this movie, so pretty authentic, uses Latino gangsters who are just as scary as regular Latino gangsters, like real-life Latino gangsters, because those are some scary dudes. Ran out of time.
I would like to rebut.
We have Elliot, who is going to rebut, and go.
If only for the chance to say this, Alonzo and Training Day ain't got shit on Serpico. You want to talk about a badass cop? This is a cop who is the reverse of Denzel Washington's character, of the only virtuous cop in the entire precinct going against all the cricket cops. So he's a, and I know they wanted to build Training Day, that's the villain, you root for the villain, and you see his downfall, but this was actually a lot more dangerous. And he actually did something good with it. So I just wanted to say that too. So
would you also like a rebuttal, JC?
No, I got nothing.
All right. Leaving it as it lies. So, Seth, based on the arguments, who's moving on here?
What are you saying at Serpico? No.
Well, you could not have picked two more polar opposite cop movies than these two, that's for sure.
That's how the math worked out.
But in the end, I have to go with Serpico 100% because, like, you know, it takes one thing to stand up against the bad guys. It takes another thing to stand up against your own.
I feel like the reason Training Day really lost that is because, like most people in the world, JC pronounced it David Ayers. There's no S at the end. And you're not the only one. I had to correct my own website partner's review today because it was like, no, it's not David Ayers. It's David Ayer. We and just then, say things like it's one of David Ayer's films.
Okay.
Apostrophe S.
No, and then the other part of it is I've actually never seen Serpico, so I thought this was too. I always thought of Serpico as a dirty cop movie. I didn't know that.
It is, but Serpico actually, is not the dirty cop. Yeah. Serpico is the cop trying to root
that's,
out.
That's corruption. What I mean. Yeah, like I thought Serpico was a dirty cop.
Also, I didn't want to. It's not my job to rebut for you, but Elliot is very wrong. In fact, French Connection, which we just talked about, is also based on a true story.
Okay, see, I didn't know that.
See, no, I wasn't going to argue against you because I'm not in that debate.
But you're going to save that for if I met you.
That's fine. I'm not worried about it.
Okay.
Yeah, because when he said that, I know that Heat is coming up later. Mm. Heat itself isn't based on a true story, but there's elements of it that are based on like real people.
Oh, like Pacino and De Niro, both real people that have been in movies. So it's based on a true story.
Cobra totally happened.
and a little aside.
And I just want to go on record by saying right now that regardless of the movie or not, Frank Serpico, that guy's a hero. I'm just going to leave it
there. There you go.
The real man.
A commendation from Seth.
And if we want to talk about a character who really, just as a little side, type of character who sticks their neck out for justice and does it even going against the police department, we got to talk about Veronica Mars. And how great that movie was.
Thank goodness we've brought it back to Veronica Mars. I was wondering if that was going to come up in our cop movie tournament.
We're always 30 seconds from it.
We are always 30 seconds from Veronica Mars. That's horrible.
Okay, a long time ago, we used to be friends.
I just realized something. Every single debate that I have in this tournament is against Adam. Every single one.
Not the single one.
Yep, it is. It is, in fact, me versus Adam, unless you've changed something I don't know about.
Well, no, isn't the lower right start with Heat and...
No, the lower rights is Heat, Shaft, Dirty Harry, and Die Hard with... Oh, you're right! No, I just...
That sounds sexual. Heat, Shaft, Dirty Harry. That's like a really weird game for
I'm gonna Heat, Shaft, Dirty Harry with a vengeance.
Damn!
That's actually our lower right quadrant right there.
That's the... Well, I'm not even going to tell that joke. That's a bad joke.
So the upper right hand, which is what we're going to start with now,
That is you and Adam.
It is me and Adam. It is Police Story versus Cobra. I'm actually really, really nervous about this one. Adam,
are you now really?
I am actually really nervous about this one. So, okay. Adam, do you want to go first or second?
Let's see if I have enough arguments for Cobra.
You should be the G.I. Joe to his
Cobra. Wait a minute. Does that movie not argue for itself?
The poster alone argues for it.
I think so.
All right. Yeah, okay, I guess I'll go first.
Okay, Adam is going to go first. Adam, your minute starts now.
Okay, so... man, okay. Well, I think the one thing that you can really take away from Cobra is that it does a great job about trying to put forth this idea of, the next generation of criminal. And for that generation, you need a next generation cop. And what you basically have out of that is Dirty Harry on steroids. Which, I mean, is practically what Cobra is. I mean, he's a guy who takes no shit from anybody. He barely listens to his superiors, usually because they don't know better than he does. And he's actually the guy who has to go out there and put bad people away. And he does it with the worst one-liners ever. And, he's just like, fuck it. I really don't care. Because I'm going to put you away. I'm going to say whatever it is I want to say. And I'm going to make sure that you don't succeed over me. And you're not going to overcome me. And, what else can you really say about Cobra? It's a movie that actually, for all of it, even all of its terribleness, it actually still reverberates through the generations. It still gets shown on TNT at least twice a day.
Wow, that's going to be a tough one to rebut against. But I'm going to try. And go. So not to take anything away from Sylvester Stallone, or as I'm going to call him, based on Adam's description, not so wordy Harry. But Police Story is... a classic of the genre because Jackie Chan's style of filmmaking, Jackie Chan's style of stunt performing really emphasizes another important aspect of being a cop, and that is putting everything on the line. If there was ever an actor who put everything on the line for his craft, it is Jackie Chan. I mean, there are stunts in this movie that not only look dangerous because they look dangerous, but look dangerous because they are. There's a great stunt in here where a bus stops and all the bad guys come flying out of the front window and land on the ground. That was an accident, guys. That was not supposed to happen. Jackie Chan is the quintessential fearless actor. He is the quintessential fearless martial artist, and he really underlines what it means to be fearless as a law enforcement agent. I think this is the perfect pairing of both his sensibilities and, the essence of being a cop. So Super Cop wins all the way. I'm waiting to see if Adam wants a rebuttal.
Nope.
Okay. All right, Seth, it's in your hands now.
Based on the arguments, I'm going to have to go with Police Story. That was a very good argument.
I am trouncing Adam.
You are the Indiana Pacers to Adam's Miami Heat.
Oh, wait, does that mean I have to talk shit and tell him it doesn't matter, even though, okay.
No, that's what Adam would say.
Oh, that's what Adam would say, that's right, yeah.
I'm going to laugh when Adam wins this.
Adam will still win this.
I mean, he's got Dirty Harry. Yeah.
He's got Dirty Harry? Oh, well, yeah, Adam's still going to win this damn thing, for crying out loud. You know, to try and be deferential, I actually watched Cobra instead of Police Story yesterday, and it didn't work out quite the way I thought.
But
you would
have done that anyway.
I would have done that anyway, let's be real.
Actually, you know what? If I'd have known that, I would have used that as my argument. Like, you know what? The person I'm arguing against chose to watch Cobra yesterday instead of the movie he was supposed to.
And then you allow you back, it's just Salisbury.
Look.
That's his Wednesday viewing of Cobra. Hey,
Roy Williams, I'm sorry, the game's over. There's nothing we can do about it. Anywho, so finishing out this particular bracket in the first round, Naked Gun versus Beverly Hills Cop. We've got two comedies on deck.
Yeah, that worked itself out nicely.
I like this. So JC is going to be arguing for Naked Gun and Elliot for Beverly Hills Cop. Gentlemen, who would like to go first?
I'll go first. Go for it.
All right, Elliot is going
at the same time. Go.
To make your arguments concordantly. All right, Elliot, your minute begins now.
Okay, here's the thing about Beverly Hills Cop that I honestly just saw last night. Amazing movie. It's one of the things you want in any movie that is action oriented. You want a good balance between action and comedy. And Beverly Hills Cop does that in spades. It shows just how you can have a guy as funny as Eddie Murphy, but then be taken seriously as an action star. Also, it has one of the best sounds you've ever heard. You know, I dare you not to start humming this. Dun 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 ba dun 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 ba ba bum ba dun bum bum ba ding da boom da dun dun dun. It also has like the Neutron dance, and then it has Mike from Breaking Bad as the second level bad guy. How awesome are your villains when Mike from Breaking Bad is your second level bad guy? And then it's the prototypical movie that shows the detective who's really good, but he's such a jackass that people don't like him, but they have to because he's so great. And he is the direct influence for Jake Peralta on the best cop show of all time, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
All right. JC, are you ready?
Yeah. I should have said all that about Cobra.
Cobra is clearly the direct influence for Brooklyn Nine-Nine. All right, JC, your minute begins now.
So, Naked Gun, directed by David Zucker, who's one of the premier names in history of comedies and spoofs. Directed Basketball, directed Airplane. There aren't too many cop movie spoofs, and that's because I think this is one of the first ones to come out, and people realize that you're not going to do much better than this. There are a lot of cop comedies, like Beverly Hills Cop, but Naked Gun is a classic when it comes to comedy and even spoof movies. The storied career that Leslie Nielsen had, this is one of the best, if not the best, of his career. This also has a catchy theme, not quite as catchy as the Beverly Hills Cop, but just as good. When it plays over the opening credits and all the jokes that are going in there, that I can watch that over and over again. Plus, this stars O.J. Simpson, and don't we love seeing O.J. Simpson as the fun-loving, non-stabby guy that he was before... You know, he became the stabby guy that we know him today. That's it.
Would you like a rebuttal, Elliot?
Yes.
Elliot, your rebuttal time begins now.
I just want to repeat everything that JC just said for effect. It contains O.J. Simpson in his fun non-stabby days. And I'm done.
Rebuttal?
But this also stars Ricardo Montalban, who was con...
I have nothing to say. Like,
yeah, yeah. All right. I gotta say, two effective rebuttals for sure. Seth, I leave this. This is seems like a barn burn. I'm gonna leave this in your hands.
I'm gonna have to go with Beverly Hills Cop on this one.
Oh wow!
I thought I had that one. All right, that's
Beverly
fine.
Hills Cop. Moving on, despite
yeah, but this is all Brian and Elliot tonight.
And despite
You and I are both 0-3. So
all right,
that's cool.
And it's funny because the only person I'm versing in this tournament who's not Adam is JC and not Elliot at all. So we'll see.
I was like, oh.
Yeah, see how I did that? See how I raised your expectations and then dashed them? just like the Clippers.
Why do you build me up?
Buttercup.
Just to let me down.
Because it's funny. All right, so we have moved into the bottom right-hand bracket and their division. And the first in this division is Heat, which will be JC, versus Shaft, which is the voted in from the readers' choice 16 seed, and I will be taking that one. So, JC, would you like to go first or second?
I'm going to let you go first because you are the definitive expert on blaxploitation, and you are passionate about that. So.
That is very true. That is a thing that I am. So I will start now. I'm really actually very happy that Shaft is not the first movie in this tournament to break the monochromatic trend. There have been a few other black cops talked about. One of whom, however, plays things for laughs in Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop. Another who has to be a crooked cop before he wins an Oscar, which was the big criticism of Denzel Washington in his Training Day Oscar. Shaft is every bit a no-nonsense, completely effective, and, you know, there's nothing funny about Shaft. Shaft is a badass mother. Yes, and I will shut my mouth. But the thing you have to understand about Shaft is it's not just an entertaining film about a badass cop. It is important to the history of cinema, not just because of its importance to the blaxploitation genre, but because up until the time that Halloween came out, it was the most successful independent film to that point in history. So you have a film that a lot of people have kind of written off as this oddity of this product of its time is actually incredibly important to understanding the history of not only cop films, but independent films. All right, and JC, it is now your turn to talk up Heat. Are you ready?
Yes.
And go.
So this is very much not an independent film. This is a 170-minute epic that is essentially boils down to Al Pacino versus Robert De Niro. Al Pacino is the cop in the film. Robert De Niro is the expert thief in the film. This film is so great amongst its ensemble cast. It doesn't even require, and this is a bit of a spoiler if you haven't seen this, it doesn't even require them to meet face-to-face until well into the movie, but that meeting is one of the more iconic scenes in any cop movie film in history. These are two guys who are clashing head-to-head almost nonstop, and it boils down to one of them walking up to the other and saying, "Hey, let's go grab a coffee and talk this out," before the conclusion goes, "Nope, I'm still going to defeat you." That's what they both say to each other, essentially. The action in this movie, so well done. It's a film that they show to training cops.
I can complete that. Oh, I'll wait for everybody.
Yeah, you know what? Let's wait till Seth deliberates.
I don't want to
see what's. I'm not going to rebut because my rebuttal would actually also serve as my argument in case this film advances into the next round. So
no, that's fine.
I'm gonna leave it. I'm gonna let it lie, and I'm gonna see what Seth says.
Salisbury's confident.
This one is tough. I will say that, but. You do bring up a good point that the conversation between the two, cop and criminal together, the whole, you're here to stop me, I'm here to do my thing, it's got, I got to go with Heat on
damn
this
it.
One.
Nah.
All respect to the baddest mofo whoever carried a gun, but I go with Heat.
No. I gotta defer to the judge every single time. But man, the other argument I was going to make, just for edification's sake, is that the soundtrack of Shaft is so good that it actually got Isaac Hayes his own movie a year later. Yeah. What other instance has that ever happened? You don't see Hans Zimmer getting his own pirate movie after Pirates of the Caribbean comes out. Like, that shit doesn't happen. That's all I'm saying.
And to finish JC's point, I think what you say, I took a shooting class when I was at LSU, and we had an instructor from the Army. He said that Heat is one of the only movies to accurately show how you advance on a target, and that the bullets actually will go through cars. Like, they're not impenetrable. They're just made with cheap aluminum now.
So LSU does have shooting classes?
Yes, they do.
Because you wouldn't know it looking at the basketball team. So,
hey. To be fair, they got beat by SMU, who's coached by Larry Brown.
That's true in the NIT. Because it matters.
SMU should have been in the damn NCAA.
That I agree with. Yeah. That I will totally agree with. All right. The last match of the first round is going to be Dirty Harry versus Die Hard with a Vengeance. This is going to be interesting.
Wow.
It's going to be interesting. Now, readers or listeners, listen. I know what you're thinking. Why Die Hard with a Vengeance? Why not Die Hard? Well, we kind of talked it out. And not only did we already do a Die Hard ripoff tournament, and it seemed a little weird to talk about Die Hard again, but it's also a situation where in Die Hard, I mean, he's kind of he happens to be a cop. He's in the wrong place at the wrong time. But in Die Hard with a Vengeance is where he really is in his element as a cop, and I don't know if I'm stepping on anyone's arguments, but the reason we decided to go with Die Hard with a Vengeance over Die Hard is because at the beginning of Die Hard with a Vengeance, he's in the actual city where he is a cop. He is doing cop work. He's not on vacation. He's not shopping. He is actually a cop sent in to deal with a case. Like, it is the most cop-like that John McClane ever gets in the entire franchise. So that's why we decided to go with Die Hard with a Vengeance over Die Hard itself. That is just a little bit of house cleaning and or housekeeping. I don't want a house clean. I'd have to kill all you motherfuckers.
But I'm not going to buy the Windex. That's you buy.
No. All right. So who's going first here? All right. Elliot is going to go first. Elliot, right. You have 1 minute to argue for Die Hard with a Vengeance and go.
Just to get it in as a part of my argument, I want to echo what Brian just said. It is a John McClane actually being a cop and his most cop-like in the precinct that he works in. Second, it is one of the first real big examples of what we see all the time these days, but was still original back in the day of a villain and the villain's intent not being revealed right away. There's that misdirection of, oh, they're planting bombs, but spoilers, they're really trying to rob the Fed. It contains Samuel Jackson before he was a big name as motherfucking Zeus, and one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in a movie where they have John McClane walking down the street in that sandwich billboard. I mean, I find that hilarious. And then also it does something that I love is that it brings back the villain, but not as the villain didn't die. It's the villain's family from the first movie. And honestly, it's the only sequel to Die Hard that most people actually do like. Everybody finds problems with 2. People find problems with 4. And 5 is a fucking abomination.
No argument here.
No. I guess I gotta make one.
I guess you... no argument here, but hopefully some arguments from over there. Adam, are you ready to argue for Dirty Harry?
Let's do it.
And go.
Okay, so Dirty Harry is a film that practically took Clint Eastwood out of the desert and just reminded everybody that it doesn't matter where you put him. A badass is a badass no matter where he is. So he's moving from the sand to the asphalt, retains his badass characteristics, and just puts it forth into the cop persona. There's not much you can say about Dirty Harry. The first place I would start is, it's the movie that you can look to that whenever you identify bad lines in movies, the reason why you can even make them considered as bad lines is because you've seen Dirty Harry, which is full of nothing but good lines. I mean, Dirty Harry is just filled with just witty one-liners and no bullshit attitude and just sticking it to the people who he doesn't have any respect for and getting the job done like you would hope a cop would do. I mean, he doesn't break the law, but he bends it just as far as he possibly can to make sure that the bad guys go away and they don't get released back. And if they do, he's going to make his damnedest sure to be sure that they go back into the cage that they were supposed to be in the first place.
Rebut.
And Elliot, rebut.
I have one just big thing I want to point out about Dirty Harry is the movie promotes the idea of the cop as the ultimate arbiter and that it's more about his mood than meeting out justice. And so I would say that's a big knock against an otherwise great movie.
Adam.
Rebut.
Rebut. Go.
You can put it that way, but sometimes whenever your superiors are not exactly making the best decisions, somebody that you want in a role like that is somebody who's going to put, not necessarily take the law into their own hands, but somebody who's going to recognize that they are capable of doing whatever it is they possibly can without fully breaking the law and ensuring that the bad guys actually get what it is that they particularly deserve.
One sentence rebuttal.
Nope.
One
sorry,
sentence.
You can't. I'm sorry. You know the rules, man. Okay. You only get one rebuttal. Okay, that is the law. According
no, that's fine.
To,
that's fine.
Hey,
that's
barter town. This
no,
is barter
I said fine. I'm not arguing. I'm not arguing.
Respect the sidebar, counselor.
That's my quip monk.
All right, Seth, it is up to you now.
Two great franchises. Well, mostly anyway.
Hey, I didn't. I don't argue that.
based on the arguments, and you guys had some great rebuttals. I'm just gonna let you know right now. But in the end, between these two, Dirty Harry barely edges out.
Dirty Harry in a squeaker.
See, my rebuttal would have been, "Who watches the Watchers?" That's all I need to say.
Oh, I'm actually kind of glad you didn't get to do that one. You've got better than that, man. Don't throw the gun at him. Don't throw the gun at him. Literally, in this tournament, don't throw the gun at him. Put it back in the holster.
Round 2. Fight!
All right, so we have entered round 2, and that means we are down to the Elite 8 of cop movies. And starting off in the Elite 8 round is
it's gonna be you and Elliot for a while now.
It's gonna be me and Elliot for a while for sure.
It's been a long time.
I shouldn't have left you
without a dope beat
to step two.
Step two.
Step two.
Step two.
Stop it. We gotta stop this. All right. So this is actually I'm really excited for this one. LA Confidential versus RoboCop. Two movies very alike when you think about it. Elliot, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
All right. Elliot is going to go first with L.A. Confidential. And, Elliot, your minute begins now.
You know, I am not a person who doesn't like wish fulfillment in movies. I love wish fulfillment. I love Pacific Rim, which is stupid as shit. I love Armageddon, which is stupid as shit. But you know what? If you're judging movies based against each other, which we're doing, you have to judge their effect on how you view the world. And if I will say one thing, is that RoboCop, it's a little bit dangerous wish fulfillment on cops in general. Because if we look at Detroit, even if Detroit had 5,000 RoboCops today, it would still be a bombed out crater. LA Confidential, it produces a more measured view of cops than RoboCop. It shows the complexity inherent in doing such a hard job. And that sometimes rules are bent, sometimes rules are broken, sometimes rules are upheld. But it's not just a black and white, I am RoboCop, I am the arbiter of justice, and everything's good.
All right. And I will start my minute now. Okay, so when you're talking about these movies, you have two movies that are trying to accomplish the same goal, which is to kind of be a mouthpiece for the time in which they represent, a mouthpiece for the grittier, crime-ridden underbelly of the eras they represent. Now, the challenge, really, I think, of these two movies, the one who faces the greater challenge is RoboCop, because RoboCop has to not only reveal to you how despicable and how completely besieged by crime Detroit was in the 80s, but it's got to do it in a way that still wish fulfillment, not so much in the violence, but wish fulfillment in its over-the-top genre concept of a robot cop. And it doesn't go lowball with it. In fact, Paul Verhoeven aims high and goes with political satire. I mean, the whole movie is actually just a very subversive joke against the entire culture of the 80s. And while LA Confidential is a great film, I mean, it's working with what it's got. There's nothing really going on under the surface. It's a subtext-free movie. RoboCop, for the fact that it's a RoboCop movie, has all the subtext.
I have one rebut.
Rebut.
My only rebut would be Paul Verhoeven is an amazing, amazing director. But the problem with his movies is he's so good at the action that some people don't see that they're satire. So it promotes still what I said is an unrealistic view of how justice can be meted out. Even though his intent was there, art is not fully done until the viewer sees it. And a lot of people miss that. It just goes straight over their heads.
I would like to rebut that.
Okay.
That is not the fault of this movie or Paul Verhoeven. That is absolutely the fault of people who demand very mainstream and very easy to digest movies without any subtext. And that is my rebuttal. Seth, it is up to you, sir.
This is probably the hardest one that we've had so far because these are both amazing movies. But there was one word said in one argument that does put it over the other, and that word was subtext, because that is what I look for in movies. I like those hidden messages. I like the audience to be grabbed by the neck and said, look at what is wrong with you in society. And for that, I have to give this one to RoboCop.
Which is funny, because RoboCop doesn't have much of a neck in yes. in the film. But he's still able to pull that off. Elliot, I got to give it up to you, man. That was well fought. Yeah. That was well fought.
I got to give it to you. Like, that was subtext really, like, as soon as you said
I was terrified.
I was like, shit.
I was terrified RoboCop was going down in the second round. And I was
like, I'm still doing the things. I'm doing the same thing I always do.
Which is what?
I'm telling you what the argument is about.
No, what this is really about is how many, like, we really have to get down to the heart of the matter, which is how many of these movies have James Cromwell and how many don't. And therefore, LA Gomez. No, I like when you do that. That makes me happy. All right, so the second matchup of the Elite Eight is The French Connection versus Serpico, which is, again,
oh my gosh,
me versus Elliot. So,
Let's talk about subtext. Let's talk about Cobra.
Well, I guess I really should have saved that argument of true stories, because here we are, French Connection versus Serpico. Anyway, Elliot. Both true stories we learned from me. Would you like to go first or
I'll
second?
Go first.
All right. Elliot is going to go first, and your time begins now.
First thing I want to say is it was my mistake in the first round. Yes, French Connection is definitely a true story. And then I want to expand. I'm not going to say anything bad against French Connection. It's an amazing movie. I just happen to think, and I will argue, that Serpico is a better one. And for this reason, you know, too often in today's society, and back into the 50s and on to the start of cinema, you have this idea of the American hero. It's usually a big guy with big guns and big arms and chest, and he gets the girl who they follow a tracking shot up her butt for some reason because Michael Bay. But this is a real American hero. This is a true American hero. This is a guy who stands up against everything that he didn't have to stand up to. He could have just kept his mouth shut and lived a nice, comfortable life. But America is about standing up and saying, you know what? Planting yourself next to the tree of liberty and saying, you know what? You move. Not letting people change you off your course. And that's what Serpico did. And this movie actually honors a true American hero and doesn't just say, this is what we think an American hero is. This is a real American hero, and it gives it that proper honor.
I just want to point out that Elliot just identified the next shirt that I want my wife to make for me.
Which is?
Michael Bay, tracking shot up her butt.
you saw Transformers 3?
No, you're right, man. It's completely
or
superfluous.
Or any Michael Bay movie.
Or in any Michael Bay movie at all. All right.
I love those movies.
It could just say tracking shot up her butt.
Tracking shot up her butt. Absolutely. That should be a term we use, man. That's like tracking shot up her butt. Mm-hmm. Anywho, I'm going to start my minute now. I feel like it would be completely futile for us to argue who is the greater in terms of what they did and what they accomplished and what they were fighting against between Popeye Doyle and Serpico. Like, that just – we're not going to get anywhere. So instead, I want to talk about the fact that in The French Connection, you have a director who is so hellbent on getting the movie about a guy who is doing everything he can to uphold the law that Friedkin is actually willing to break the law to make that movie. And by that, I mean that great car chase that we were talking about earlier was actually filmed without obtaining a single fucking permit. I mean, that is run and gun style. That is a guy who, like Popeye Doyle, is just out to right all the wrongs and get the story told the way that it's supposed to. I also think that there's a lot of realism in this movie. There's this whole thing about Popeye putting his hat in a specific place in his car, which turns out, and Seth can verify this for me, it was a universal sign that an undercover cop was in that car. So they even knew, like, the most finite minutiae details of being an undercover cop within this film. So Friedkin did his research for sure. Go for it.
And I wasn't going to have one until you said about the car chase. I think that's an awesome story. But if you're going to talk about a cop movie and talking about a hole in the law, it's great to bend rules when you're not harming anybody. But not getting a permit for a car chase, they could have killed people. They didn't, but they could have. And also, I want to just say one last thing. Al Pacino's amazing in this movie. I haven't said it enough.
I will rebut as well very quickly. Nobody got hurt. And also, it's very much like, you know, if we talk about Dirty Harry, for example. What about the rights of that little girl? I want to say, what about the rights of everyone in the audience wanting to watch a good car chase?
And well, what about Non-Stop, though?
Non-Stop, though. All right, Seth, it is in your hands, sir.
Two true stories. It should come down to this. Between these two, based on your very, very good arguments for both, it's getting harder and harder the closer we get. But I have to go with Serpico.
All right. Well, way to go, Elliot.
Serpico. And to answer your question about whether or not that's a undercover cop thing, if it ever was, they changed it in 1971 when the movie came out, because now all of America knew it.
Well, but let's be real, Seth. Even if it was true, would you be able to tell us? I mean, it's an undercover cop thing.
Maybe.
Fair enough. Well, Elliot, you and I will meet once more in the top right-hand division, Police Story versus Beverly Hills Cop. Would you like to go first or second, sir?
I'll go first.
You're going to go first. All right. Elliot is going first. Your minute begins now.
I tell you, if there's one thing I can, because I've already said my main arguments for Beverly Hills Cop, so these are my second level. This is the next level. If you want to know why Eddie Murphy is Eddie Murphy and why people still care what the fuck he does, you have to watch two movies and one comedy special. You need to watch Raw, you need to watch Coming to America, and you need to watch Beverly Hills Cop. You do not fully understand how funny he is until you watch Beverly Hills Cop. And I'm saying that from experience, because I did not get it until I watched it last night. I'm like, oh, this is what people see in him. This is why Hollywood every 6 years blows its load, because Eddie Murphy might be back. Because seeing him as Axel Foley, good Lord, he's amazing. He's electric. He can shift tone like a finely tuned car. He can go from comedy to serious in like a second. That hotel lobby scene where he's just joking around with the person, and then he's like, I can't get a reservation here. you mean no are allowed in this hotel is what you're saying. And then he just switches it again. Like, it's an amazing movie by Eddie Murphy, so that's why I argue for this movie.
I do love that moment.
All right, and I am going to start my minute right now. I'm not going to argue with you that Eddie Murphy was, for a time, it kind of associated with these great action comedies. But Jackie Chan, that's his bread and butter. He is the clown prince of action. Not only does he deliver in the action department with these breathtaking stunts, but almost all of Police Story is this comedy about him trying to convince a witness to testify against her boss. And one of the ways he does it is to actually have another member of the police force dress up like a killer and like, I'm going to get you, so he can be the big hero and convince her, like, oh, well, things are really dangerous now. You should probably go ahead and cooperate. But the thing about Jackie Chan is that, yeah, there is no more physical action comedian than Jackie Chan. One of his mentors, one of his idols, I should say, is Buster Keaton. You start thinking about the work that Buster Keaton did, and then you look at Jackie Chan and you realize this is some next-level stuff he's doing. He's not just funny. He's not just a great acrobat and a great martial artist. He is all of these things combined into one simply spectacular package.
No rebut.
No rebut. Yeah,
and
right.
I agree with everything you said, man.
All right.
I actually never realized how similar, but I guess both of those kind of films, you can kind of take them.
Yeah, absolutely. They're both action comedies.
Yeah.
So, Seth, knowing that, it's up to you to decide which advances.
Well, I think based on the arguments, because actually, truth be told, I have not seen either one of these, so I'm completely going on the arguments in this one. I had to go with Police Story.
All right. Yeah. Police Story making it on to the final four.
And before we move on, just since we're talking about Police Story, a movie from Hong Kong, you got anybody who hasn't seen it, I beg you, I think it's on Netflix, to go watch Yes, Madam. It has Michelle Yeoh. And it's about female cops in the 80s, and it's so much fun.
Wow, I've never even heard of that one.
Yeah, right.
It's very rare that Elliot recommends a movie that none of us have heard of, and that's exactly what just happened.
I only heard about it in a Leog from Chris like 6 years ago.
Oh, well, there you have it. Now, for the final, to decide the final spot in the final four is Heat versus Dirty Harry. Now, this is the clash of the titans here. JC will take Heat, and Adam will take Dirty Harry. Who wants to go first, gentlemen?
You can go first.
Okay. This is like SEC championship before the BCS championship game.
Right, exactly.
This is the real game right here.
Exactly. All right. So, Adam, your minute for Dirty Harry begins now.
Okay. So, we've talked about a couple things so far during the tournament, and both came up earlier with French Connection and Serpico. It was, as well as RoboCop, it's the combination not just of the wish fulfillment factor along with something that actually is based off of or inspired by a true story. Dirty Harry was inspired by the Zodiac killings that took place there in San Francisco. That's exactly what sparked this whole storyline and the plot. And the wish fulfillment factor of that is the Zodiac killer was never actually found or never actually
identified.
So it's taking those aspects. It's basically like a Quentin Tarantino of Inglourious Basterds for a serial killer who was never caught. It's like, well, what happens if they actually caught him? Well, you stick Dirty Harry on him, and this is exactly what happens. He jumps onto a car bus full of kids and saves the day and makes sure that the Zodiac killer is actually found before he can actually kill any more people. So I really don't think how you can get much more wish fulfillment than that.
All right. JC, are you ready?
Yes.
And go.
So while all of Heat wasn't necessarily based on true stories, it was based on real people, a Chicago cop and a famous thief. The cop even died in a shootout from a robbery of a grocery store. One of the cool things that Heat has going for it is its element of realism. One of the fascinating things about this movie as you watch it is none of it was made on the soundstage. It's filmed in 65 actual locations in and around Los Angeles. The shootouts of it are so real. One of the points I was going to get to in my original argument is that in 2002, one division of the Marine Corps would show this scene, the final shootout scene, to recruits as a way of showing them an example of the proper way to retreat while under fire. So Michael Mann is someone who also knows his cop movies, definitely did his research when it came to that aspect of this film.
All right.
Quick rebuttal.
Oh, quick rebuttal from Adam, and go.
Okay, so using Heat as a form of actually recruiting people, Dirty Harry is what you show people whenever you want to show them how to be a badass. I mean, you put Dirty Harry up on the screen, and that's exactly how it is that it, cop, you know, cop, whatever profession you're going into, if you want to be a plumber, if you want to be a badass plumber, you watch Dirty Harry and you see how exactly how it is you deliver lines to your customers.
my rebuttal to that, more of a rebuttal to Deadpool, but I know when Deadpool came out, and the people of San Francisco didn't want another Dirty Harry movie made because they felt that Dirty Harry put San Francisco in a bad light.
All right, Seth, it is up to you, sir.
So Dirty Harry, truthful.
It's been brought up twice, but that shootout, I mean, knock on wood, hope to God I never have to get involved in anything like that. Prepared to do so, but no true cop ever wants to. But they're absolutely right. That is one of the most realistic, intense scenes in a police movie. And just that being brought up again, that edges heat out over Dirty Harry.
Wow. Wow, I would have put solid money, and not just watery money apparently, but solid money on Dirty Harry winning the whole thing. Does that officially knock Adam out of the tournament entirely?
Out of the tournament.
The king is dead. Long live the king. Rocksauce Studios, which is our sponsor today. Rocksauce loves working in the app industry. Their team, founded and based in Austin, Texas, is as obsessed with mobile experience out of the office as they are in the office, whether that means design, technology, cutting-edge development, and apps of all types and arenas. Whether you're ready to start your project, looking to schedule a speaking event, or have a couple of questions for their team, reach out to them, www.rocksaucestudios.com, and get a little saucy.
Round three, fight!
And it's round three. Yes, round three, indeed. It's the final four, and our final four are RoboCop, Serpico, Police Story, and Heat, even though I wrote Dirty Harry.
It's a strong final four.
Even though, you know, that's how much I thought Dirty Harry was going to win the whole thing, is even when it got knocked out, I still wrote it down. Whoopsie. So the first of the final four matches is RoboCop versus Serpico, which is me versus Elliot. You want to go first or second, buddy?
I'll go second.
All right. And I will go first, and I will start now. So the philosopher Marcel Proust once said that the truth is easy, but satire is hard. And that's absolutely the case. It boils down to these two movies and what the crucial argument to consider is. Yes, Serpico is a movie about finding the truth. It's a movie about revealing corruption and revealing things to the audience in as broad stroke manner as possible. RoboCop is about entertaining an audience who then goes home and thinks about it and realizes, oh, my entire way of life, living in the 80s, being completely obsessed with capitalism and spending, you know, the Reaganomics, everything has been skewered entirely and masterfully by Paul Verhoeven, but you didn't notice that because the movie's so damned entertaining. It is one of the best examples of taking what should on paper be a completely trashy exploitation, nothing of a drive-in fare, and making it something much more intelligent, something that really is important in the overall oeuvre of American cinema. So that is my argument for RoboCop. Elliot, are you ready?
Yep.
And go.
I suppose I was going to argue just in terms of Pacino and how great it was, but I got to take you at you what you said. Here's the thing about Serpico. It is based on a true story, and in real life, Serpico wasn't a cyborg. So I'm sorry if they can't go and just subvert things because the things happen that way. It's just the way things happen, and he happened to be a man, you know, who didn't get blown up and then get reassembled and has a cool gun that comes out of his side leg. Here's the thing that I think puts Serpico over RoboCop is that, again, like I said in the first round, and I don't consider the audience's fault, some people miss that message. You can't miss that message in Serpico. It's still changing things today. If we were to talk about just contributing to the overall zeitgeist, I would argue, and I am arguing, that Serpico directly influenced RoboCop, and RoboCop would not exist if it was not for Serpico and his heroic actions. So that's my argument, and that's what I'm saying. I'm sorry that Serpico was not a cool, cool cyborg.
I'm going to rebut something real quick.
Serpico was a cyborg.
First of all, RoboCop was not influenced by Serpico. If it was, then RoboCop would not be a product of the system. He would be trying to work from within to destroy the system. And it wasn't until his prime directive was removed. His prime directive was to be a cog in the wheel of the system. And also, if Serpico had been a cyborg, that would have been a 10 times better movie.
Okay, one rebut.
Do it.
What I mean to say when I say influence, I'm saying contributing to the overall feeling of America that when they're writing that script, it influences and it infects that script, and it can't. That's just the way art progresses. And I'm done.
Okay, Seth, it's up to you, buddy.
RoboCop was influenced by Serpico. Serpico wins. The judge has spoken.
What? Yes!
That is bullshit. That is categorically...
It's actually a really good argument. I've never considered that
because
before.
Because it's not true.
It's dealing with the same elements.
I'm filing an appeal.
He's a good cop. He's trying to do his thing.
I'm filing an appeal.
He's screwed over, turned into a robot, but he's still a good cop. But in the end... That does go back to Serpico.
Just so we're clear, we can just make shit up. Because I'll make shit up. I'd be happy to. Dirty Harry is a remake of Casablanca.
Well, can I tell you how I looked at that? Can I tell you how I led to that argument?
By bullshit. Yeah.
No. When you said the word Proust, that just hit my mind on Jungian archetypes, and that got me to the archetype argument.
To be completely honest here, Marcel Proust never said that. I fucking made that up. I literally made up that quote. Proust actually didn't have anything to say about satire whatsoever. Proust was all about memory. So anyway, I guess my memory was a little fuzzy of what the truth is. Anywho, so Serpico enters.
The judge declares this entire competition null and void.
Yay! It's about time. All right, so Serpico enters the finals. And now for the other Final Four battle to determine who else is going to the finals is Police Story versus Heat. Mm. That's me versus JC. JC, would you like to go first or second?
I'll go second.
All right. JC is going second. I am going first. And here we go. So I've talked a lot about, Jackie Chan being one of the really iconic and seminal actors in the action genre. It extends way further than that. He was influencing an entire nation's cinematic culture. In fact, the reason this movie is called Police Story is they had to give it a kind of vague title because every time he would announce what the title of his next movie would be, like Legend of Drunken Master, everybody else in China would struggle to make Chinese boxer movies to beat him to the box office. He was that influential. He was that important to a nation's basically what the climate of their films were. So when you think about that, you have an entire nation ripping off Jackie Chan. And the only person ripping off Michael Mann in Heat is Michael Mann ripping off himself, because much of the movie Heat is actually cribbed from an earlier film he did called Thief. There are so many elements to the movie Thief that turn up yet again in Heat that, yes, while the movie is very impressive, and yes, you talk a lot about that shootout, but it does not hold a candle to a guy who, every time he announced the title of his movie, the climate of films in his country changed. And that is my argument. Are you ready?
Yeah.
And go.
So in regards to Heat, we can talk about what it is that makes us like cop movies, and we can talk about something that I'm pretty sure all of us or most of us did when we were kids, and that's play cops and robbers. And this is one of the definitely modern definitive cops and robbers movies. One cop versus an entire crew of robbers, epic shootouts, epic shootouts. The entire Thief crew has its cast of characters. It's all memorable. Val Kilmer makes an extremely memorable and crazy villain. This film also shows two sides of the coin. It shows the turmoil that the cop goes through, going after these robbers. Shows the turmoil of the leader of the robbers trying to run away from the cop. Makes you really kind of feel and see both sides of the coin.
I have one quick rebuttal.
Yeah.
The other game I played a lot as a kid, The Floor is Hot Lava. The person who would be the absolute best at that game in the history of the world, Jackie Chan. That guy would be diving off curtains, off couches, off like the ottoman. Did you really just pirouette off the ottoman? Like, that is impressive,
sir. Where did he get a rope?
Where did he even get a rope?
I got nothing for The Floor is Lava.
Like, it's not.
It's not. All right, Seth.
This movie is called Heat.
It's it's up to you, buddy.
Well, I hate to say it, but the Police Story argument, had it been more focused on the police aspects of it and not so much on Jackie Chan, that's a cultural argument, not a police argument, so I have to edge this one out to Heat.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. So I'm now eliminated from the tournament as well.
All due respect to Mr. Jackie Chan.
True story.
So the finals, we basically got Pacino versus Pacino.
That is entirely true. Al Pacino was in both movies of the finals.
Final round fight!
It's the final countdown!
welcome to the final round. Serpico taking on Heat. Man, this is, I got to tell you guys, this is not where I expected this to go. But just like this actual March Madness tournament that we've been watching, anything is fucking possible. And, okay, so who's going first here in this final matchup?
I'll go first.
Okay. All right, Elliot is going first. Elliot, your minute begins now.
Okay, well, when we talk about a police movie, you want a movie that shows not only the cool parts about being a cop, not only the real, and not only the technical parts. Like, I'm going to give it to Heat. That is an amazing, they're technically amazing. It's a great movie. The conversation that that happens between him and De Niro, you got to be ready to go in a second. That's great. But here's the thing. It doesn't really, really show how difficult it is to be a cop. It makes it look very, very, like, it makes it look like a, not a good time, but just something that's manageable in the, even in the dire circumstances, whereas Serpico presents how hard it is to not only fight against the bad guys, but to fight against your own. Heat is a very, it tries to be gray, but it's sort of a black and white movie, and you got De Niro versus Pacino. And it, and Serpico presents a more realistic, multi-layered gray approach to the way things are and saying, you know, even those things are gray, I'm taking a stand, I'm going to stand for what's right, I'm going to be a real cop.
All right. JC, are you ready?
Yeah.
Your final defense of Heat begins now.
So one of the things I think Heat has going for it in regards to, it's an argument that's been brought up in this tournament and other versions before, and it's accessibility. Heat is a more modern movie. It's a longer, more epic movie. It's one that I think more people will identify with. As I even showed an example of, I think you mention to people today the name Serpico, and they're going to associate that with a dirty cop movie, which it is, but they're going to think that Serpico is a dirty cop. Full disclosure, the reason why I think that is because of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back when he calls a dude Serpico when he's, like, beating him. So that's why I thought, that's why I was misinformed about that movie. but, so Heat, wasted all my men on that. Yeah, that's all I got.
I got one quick rebuttal.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm waiting for the rest of JC's time.
I had things while Elliot was going, but I didn't write them down.
Shit. All right, Elliot, your rebuttal.
I do agree with you about accessibility, but when you talk about accessibility, Serpico is available on Netflix. It's available on Amazon Prime Instant. And on top of that, the only reason I even saw Serpico is that they taught it to me in a class. So there's accessibility, and then there's being so seminal and so influential that it's assigned reading and assigned viewing. So that's what I would say.
Well, Heat is available on HBO Go, which is how I watched it a few days ago. And I do remember my original argument in that, I wouldn't say that Heat shows that being a cop is semi-manageable because of the shootout that we've talked about several times.
You are both children. I want you to know that.
He's like, he sounds like Paul Giamatti when he gets angry.
Wow, we have rebuttals.
Hey, Elliot, I don't think accessibility means whether it's available on Netflix. Anyway, Seth, I don't know. Just, it's up to you, man.
What, I thought that was good.
No, you did well. Just the whole, like, well, it's available on HBO Go. No, it's available on Netflix. You guys.
Thank you for killing my arm before the judge decides.
No. I killed both of your arms. Yeah. I want both of those stricken from the record.
The rebuts are done.
Anyway, Seth, ignore what I said and make your judgment.
Well, we talk about accessibility, and what that makes me think of is not just the movies, but the profession itself. Now, I'm going to borrow a line from Pixar's Ratatouille here that anyone can become a cop. That's not to say that anyone can, but a good cop can come from anywhere. Now, when you look at that and you talk about accessibility and you want the audiences to see what truly is policing? What does it mean to do this line of work? Why do people like me choose this line of work? Do we choose it to get involved in shootouts? Absolutely not. It's fun to watch, but, you know, I hope I never have to do anything like that, and all the good cops I know feel the same way. Why do we get into this? We get into this at its core, as cliche as it sounds, to help people and to do the right thing. So when you want people to see a cop movie to see what policing really is supposed to be about, accessible or not, sometimes you got to force people to watch what they need to see. So based on all that, all your arguments, I'm giving it to Serpico.
Woo! Serpico. Wow. When he Serpico started, takes
I thought,
it.
I thought he was leaning it towards me.
I didn't really know where that was going. Yeah. It was fun. Although, a point of order, I believe it was actually Marcel Proust who said that anybody can be a cop, but not everyone should. I also made that up, too. In any event,
yes. Yes.
Is Serpico yes. taking it in the final round? That has... we've done it. I mean, we've pretty much solved this case of the missing cop movie champion. That case has been solved. Seth, thank you so much for judging the tournament. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, I had fun.
It added an air of credibility, which is something that we've always lacked. to have a cop actually judge our cop movie tournament. So thanks again, man.
No problem.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us here on Inside the Locker for our totally accurate, desperately necessary movie elimination tournament. I actually got it that time. All right, for cop movies, and we have settled the score once and for all, and it's been a lot of fun. And next week is our Marvel movie tournament, and that one is really I think going to make people very angry, which is something we tend to do by accident so often that it's kind of nice to do it on purpose now.
Yeah, I get to see my Captain America song that time.
there you go. I want to remind you, Inside the Locker is on Twitter at ITLcast, or you can follow us individually. I'm at BryGuySalisbury.
At ITL Elliot.
At the _ beef.
At JCDeLeon1.
And you can also find the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. And please do consider becoming a subscriber. I can't emphasize enough how cool the incentives are that we're going to be announcing within the next couple weeks for everyone who not only decides to become a contributor, but everyone who up to this point has been giving out of the goodness of their hearts. We really do appreciate that. But we're going to go ahead and wrap it up for this week, guys. Thanks for joining us. And as we always do, we want to remind you that sports are not just for jocks or cops anymore.